Translation, Prabhupada Vaisabhanga Sisi Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Translation, 27 Chatur Yugas have already passed. Those upon whom you may have decided are now gone, and so are their sons, grandsons, and other descendants. You cannot even hear about their names. Purport. During Lord Brahma's day, 14 Manus, or 1,000 Mahayugas, pass away. Brahma informed King Kakudmi that 27 Mahayugas, each consistent of the four periods, Satya, Treta, Dwapa, and Kali, had already passed. All the kings and other great personalities born in those yugas had now departed from memory into obscurity. This is the way of time as it moves through past, present, and future. Om Agyanam Dhinam Nishyagyanam Salakaya Chakshur Mitham Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Dama Om Vishnu Badaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pacharine Nevishesha Shundavari Pasyati Satharine Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivash Adi Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Okay, two parts. Here we finish in the previous story of this, as the title of this chapter, the marriage of Sukanya and Chavan Muni. Chavan was offended. Very powerful sage, Chavan Muni. He was offended when the king came there, and his daughter, Sukyamya. She saw he was actually in a wormhole, in mystic power. So probably keeping cool there, or doing some meditation, and he's very easy. Find a nice gopher, find a nice hole. And so he reduced his size. But she saw something glowing there, strange, so she pierced it. And it so then Arjuna overcame the offense and the king offered his daughter in marriage. But, and it was actually his desire, Chavan, because indirectly he hinted by asking, is your daughter married? So the king could understand. And but then he was a very old man, so he asked the Ashwini Kumars came through. They're we call the demigod physicians, and he asked if they could restore his youth, and in turn he would give them a pot of shomaras. So they did that. They took him and they gave him a very young, beautiful body. And in turn, to keep his promise, when he got the king, his wife's father, to perform this at yajna and produce the shomaras, which he gave to the Kumaras. And here we're reading how then the father comes back and he sees his daughter with this beautiful young boy, and he's a little upset. What's going on? You know, it's not your husband. And then so she tells him, actually it is my husband. And she told him the story. But meanwhile, it says here, King Indra was angry because only devatas are allowed to drink shomaras. The Ashwini Kumaras, they didn't fit into that category. So he's very very angry, and he was going to try to kill Chavana Muni. And therefore he put his thunderbolt weapon, which is irresistible normally. But by the Chavana Muni's Shakti in his arm froze. He couldn't use it. And then he realized the power of Chavana Muni and submitted. And then they gave a special concession to the Ashwari Ashwini Kumaras that they would be allowed in the future to drink this Somaras, which is a very invigorating tonic in the future with the demigods. That was the end of that story. Then we're going on the different dynasties. this is where Chavana Prash is coming from, yeah? From Chavana Muni. So you take that. It doesn't exactly have the same effect, but people like that Chavana Prash. They think maybe it worked for me. So then he's going on through the different dynasties here we're coming to King Kakudni, who went to Lord Brahma to find a husband for his beautiful daughter. I already overstepped. I read that verse, but this is a success story in the Bhagavatam for the daughter, as we will hear what is the great benediction that she actually receives. another story will be coming there. You can read about in the Krishna book also. And so, but when he went to Lord Brahma and to ask for a husband for his daughter, a suitable husband, and Lord Brahma was engaged in the court. There was dancing and singing going on, the Gandavas, and he was absorbed in that. So then the king politely waited, and when he finished, then he came and expressed his desire that he have find a nice husband for his daughter. And then Brahma began to laugh. He says, you know how long you've been here? You know how long you've been waiting for this dance to finish? 27 cycles of 4 yugas have passed in this, while this recital was going on. This is in earth years, is very small. Everyone lives 100 years, but that's relative to their particular time. Brahma also lives 100 years, but here, one music performance is 27 chatur yugas. So this is just mind-boggling, the distances and times that are presented in this Srimad Bhagavatam. So when Brahma's laughing that they've all gone. Modern history, how far can we go back? How far do they go back? Egyptians, huh? More than 5. They can't go back very far, right? 10,000. Say they go back 27,000 years, right? So most, they can't do any more than that. And here, 27, it's a 400, wait, how, Kali Yuga lasts for 432,000 years, right? So 427 left, apparently. 5,000 have gone since the disappearance of Krishna. That's when the Kali Yuga set in. So 5,000 years have gone. So we hardly know that. And then Treta Yuga, we can't even understand the beginning of into Treta Yuga, just in the beginning of Treta Yuga. We can't possibly understand what's going on. There's no such historical record outside of the Puranas. And then outside of Dwapara Yuga. Then Treta Yuga is much, much greater time scale. And Satya Yuga is a much, much greater time scale. And there's 27 cycles of these 4 yugas have passed during one musical performance of Lord Brahma. So that's that was the situation. So then he's laughing at All those people that you had in mind as a nice son-in-law, yeah, they've all gone. They've gone. Their children have gone. Nobody remembers. There's not even a name of the dynasty left anymore. Nobody remembers their names anymore. Right? So that is the effect of time. You see, everyone is. When you're in your own 100 years, it's a long time. Our 100 years is a long time. The dog lives how many? 7 years? 14 years? It's a long time. It's a lifetime for him. So, but it's the same thing. Whenever species you're born, some species, the Prabhupada says, some insects are born. They're born, and the next day they're finished. Their lifespan is one day, night, one night. And everything they do within that night, they reproduce and they, you know, so that's for them, that's one lifetime. But they don't know. They don't realize what's going on. That's the covering potency of Maya. They think they're doing okay. They're busy about doing what their nature is driving them to do. And it's the same with the animals. It's the same with the human beings. It's the same with the demigods. Everyone's doing the same thing. Everyone is making plans. What shall I do for the future, generally? Right? Everyone is thinking of the future. That's how nature, the nature of this material world is its dukkhalaya, Krishna says. It's the material nature is very aggressive. Pushing. The pushings are, we're being pushed all the time by hunger, thirst, old age, diseases, lamentation, fear, envy, all those things that keep pushing us. Time. They're all bought by this great kala factor. So everyone is, all the conditioned souls are very anxious at every moment about their safety, fearful situation. Although we don't think like that, but actually if you analyze it, why is everyone concerned about the future? Why does everyone know, what should I do in the future? And making plans for that. Generally, most people are doing that. Should I change my ashram? Should I change my place? Should I change this? Should I change that? What about the future? It's a real problem, because the material world does present problems. England's not so bad. The government, the system here is not so bad, you know? Because you get health insurance, you get a pension. Some of the places I visit in Europe, there's nothing, you know. You're on your own. It's hard to work. It's hard to buy a house or to, you know, and then you've got to earn enough money to live on when you can't work anymore. It's tough. It's really tough. People are suffering out there. Especially the, you know, high taxes. In Switzerland, half the average wage is spent on your rent. So it's difficult to actually live in the material world. Pushing. And everyone is, so you've been forced to push by these, forced to move by these onslaughts on the material body. So what to do? That is time. That's it. Krishna showed Arjuna his form of time as the Visharup. And Arjuna was scared stiff, right? Shaking, crying, trembling, fall down. What is it? Oh, please take it away. I've had enough. I don't want to see anymore. I asked you to show me, but now I've seen enough. Horrible. Please, what is it? So Krishna says, that's the manifestation, physical manifestation of my time. That taking away everyone's life, everyone is rushing towards the blazing mouths, entering into his blazing mouths. So that's material world. So it's full of anxiety for us, poor living entities, poor little conditioned soul inside the body. So many, all these demands are pressed upon them. So it's very difficult. So therefore you have to think about the future, more or less. And everyone's so concerned about, you know, what they will do, what kind of what kind of husband, what kind of wife they get. Everyone wants the best. Not like here. Our heroine here, what's her name? The daughter of the king, Rivetti. So she's fortunate also. She gets a very good husband. But everyone wants a husband like her. But unfortunately, there's only one. what is the use of it all, really? Because when you look back, we're making so many programs for our stability in the material world and maintenance and our stability. Peace is the thing that everyone's looking for. Security. Because it's very, very troublesome in the material world. So security is the main thing. Defending is the first thing. Defending, eating, sleeping, defending. You can pack them all under defense. They're things that you have to do. Things that are forced upon us. And then there's the enjoying. There's the third thing is enjoyment, which is actually the main thing. But the most pressing things are these other three things, defense. So most of our time is spent on defense. the desire is to enjoy, but we have to address and prepare our defense measures. We have to think what we're going to eat. A few hours we have to eat. Every few hours we have to eat. Then you have to sleep, and you need a place to sleep. What kind of food to eat? You have to wear protective clothing. So all these things are forced on us. Although we're used to it, and we take them as, we try to turn those things which we're forced to do, we try to turn them into pleasurable activities. But actually we're forced to do those things. So it's a difficult situation. What everyone's in the material world, no matter what species of life, that's the physics of the material world. There's the creation, growth, sustenance, maintenance, offspring, dwindling, and then vanish again. But in every life, everything is so important. Everyone is attached to this particular life. It's very important. Our future is very important now. It means a lot to us. Isn't it? And previous birth was nothing. We had the same desires and the same aspirations and the same hopes and the same attachments. Don't think we didn't have it the last lifetime. Don't think we was equally as attached. We had equally as much love for our near and dear ones. And now they're not even a figment of our imagination. Right? Doesn't mean anything anymore. And similarly, these things are so important for us today. In the next life, they won't mean a thing. Forgotten all about them. Someone was telling us how they would, how they really, they want to be reunited with their family in the spiritual world. I said, which family? This family. And really, it's my desire, I'm praying to you, that we can all be reunited in the spiritual world. I said, you probably said that so many times if you was a pious man. It's not very nice, you know. You've said it to the other people. I love these so much. I only want to be with these. And now they're gone. Now you're saying with the next set. No, only these ones. It's not very chaste. Right? So you forget all about that because your karma. We have a certain set of karma that's experienced in one lifetime. When that set is finished, then that's called death. Then you get into a new set of karma to experience. So what is the actual, what's it really all about? That's a question someone should be asking. What is it, you know, what is actual, what's reality? What is the purpose of life? That is given in the Srimad Bhagavatam. All these histories are given. It's all about people who are trying to be, resolve issues, trying to make things good on the planet, right? Pious people trying to stamp out evil and make piety. And this, and you know, we have quite a vast history here in the Srimad Bhagavatam. The Srimad Bhagavatam mentions a number of histories in 10 canto. It says this Srimad Bhagavatam is a million verses in the heavenly planets. There's a lot more histories there. But what is everyone trying to do? They're just trying to better themselves, make the life more comfortable, and either they'll get off on that position of being a controller, being on charge, or being a good man. I'm the well wisher, Shri. I'm your well wisher. I'm your best friend. This is the Ishwar Bhav. I am Krishna. I will protect everyone. I will make everything nice. I will see that the country is well. as if we can actually do something. And then you die, and then someone else comes and takes the same position. And what's left? Just a memory, and then that fades away, and it's all gone, and then someone else comes. And Bhumi Devi, she's talking. She's all these kings. All these kings continuously fighting on different parts of my body, planet Earth. And then the one who conquers, he thinks, now the earth belongs to me. Then a greater king comes and conquers him and says, now the earth belongs to me. And this is going on perpetually. And then they come and they all die. She said, but I'm always here. Who actually owns me? They're thinking like that. Now I am the owner of the earth. And then they die and someone else comes down and they're fighting each other for control. And then they die. Then again, she said, everyone's coming and going. I'm remaining here. No one's actually owning me. They think they're owning me for a little while. For a few minutes, a few moments, then they come and there they go. So therefore, we hear all these stories. This is to make us a little more broad-minded, a bigger perspective, looking at life. When we see these histories all in a line, and see what is the actual result? What is it all mean? Even, you know, Krishna personally comes to act like an ordinary human being. He does the same thing, right? He's a pious man. I've come to establish piety, protect religion, annihilate the miscreants. And Krishna does it. He shows it. He does it. And then he establishes Yudhisthira on the throne. Then everything is wonderful for a little while. And Yudhisthira goes and installs Parikshit Maharaj, and everything's wonderful for a little while. It's only 5,000 years ago. Look, big mess now. Right? So even when the Lord personally comes, establishes it, how long does it last? Right? Few hundred, few thousand years, that's all. Then again it goes down. So what is the purpose of it all? So the Lord's using this as a reason. He has to come and display his pastimes. He wants to attract us back to Godhead. So he does that and appears and performs some activity so that we can become attracted to him. And so he acts like a noble person we would act for our values. No, he's a good man. This is a good person who will put down evil and establish righteousness. Then in our estimation as human beings, he's a good guy, he's a good man, so we like him. So then Krishna acts like that. he makes a rule, but the rule is also there. It says, Krishna says, of course he's not affected by it. He appears in the material energy. His material energy is his creation. Earth, water, fire, air, mind, intelligence. These are my energies, my separated energies, inferior energies. So everything that we can perceive is like Krishna's energy, inferior energy. There's my paraprakti, the spiritual energy. Then there's this second energy. So then there's a third energy which comprises of living entities, Bhagavad Gita, which comprises of, that's us, living entities, who are trying to exploit the material energy. They're coming from the superior energy, but they're trying to take happiness, take shelter in the inferior energy, in Maya. So this is what is going on. So that is the cause of the perpetuation of the material creation. Krishna says they are sustaining the universe by their desires. By their desire means to achieve something in this world, which is illusion, because the spirit soul has nothing to do with this world. It's supposed to be in the spiritual world. But we come here and we have a separatist desire from that of Krishna. So then he creates his playground and puts us here to try to fulfill our dreams. And when we become frustrated, it's hoped that we raise our hands and say, God help me. Then he'll, okay. This is what you should do. Give up that foolish struggle of trying to make a nice place here where there's no problems, and then you can be happy. It doesn't work. It's material. It's created as a place of distress for the spirit soul. The spirit soul doesn't fit. It's you have nothing to do with this material energy, Krishna says. You're a different energy, different category. Huh? But you can't enjoy that. That's a different energy from you. You can't enjoy that prakriti, although we think we can. So this is the Maya, and Krishna's actually covered us with that Maya because of our desire to act in a way which is not in conjunction with the way the Lord wants us to act. And we see that's the history. Everyone is doing the same thing. Everyone is trying to resolve the issues of their particular time. Isn't it? That's what all the stories are about. Everyone has a problem here. Javana has a problem. He's a mystic. He wants to get married. You know, he does it his way. Indra gets angry. Hey, you can't do that. You're stepping out of line. Javana has to use his potency. So there's always everything's problematic. You're trying to do something for the good of everyone or yourself. But it's beset with problems. And then afterwards, it's all finished. And you take another birth and do this exactly the same thing again. This is the way of Maya. So what's the alternative? Krishna said, the alternative is you just forget about the material situation. Tavadaman. You forget, you turn away from that material energy, trying to adjust it, and turn towards me. Give up all those different ideas that we have, just turn towards me, and I'll protect you. Don't worry about your mundane rules of morality and things like that, sinful and pious act, don't worry about that. I'll protect you from that. It won't apply. When you're facing me, when you're serving me, those rules don't apply anymore. You come under my divine prakriti, at least if you're serious. So those rules don't apply anymore. The material rules don't apply anymore. You're not obliged to follow the rules which Krishna himself gives to elevate us. The religion, the Vedas, the scriptures coming from the Lord. But then he says, I come to establish Dharma, and then at the end of the day, he says, Sava Dharma, Priti Dharma, give up all Dharmas, just surrender to me. That it constitutes the highest Dharma. because we're from the Paraprakriti, we're from the superior energy, so then the superior energy enters into the inferior energy as it is, untouched, like a bubble. Krishna enters in and he has his pastimes. It's like the spiritual world and within the material world. And he carries on his pastimes as usual, right? With his friends and his relatives. And he does whatever he wants. He performs his wonderful pastimes, unaffected. And it looks like he's part of the material world. You know, he's killing the rakshasas, and he's crying when Sita goes, and he's, all kinds of things go on. But he's acting within the spiritual atmosphere. He's not within the material atmosphere. But only the devotees can perceive that. And they can only perceive Krishna, however he appears as. The demons, they don't see that. Because Krishna reveals himself to one's degree of surrender to him. If you surrender to Krishna, Krishna will surrender to you. Right? If you surrender completely to Krishna, then Krishna comes under your control. That is a rule, spiritual rule. Right? The Brijbasis, they've completely surrendered to Krishna. Krishna becomes their servant. They're in his hand. So that's a rule. Krishna's a very wonderful person, wonderful ideas he has. But he's making the rules for the, because we're attached to this place, and we're attached to rules and regulations. We're attached to, you know, putting things into boxes. So Krishna gives rules, paradigms by which to work by. Because we can't accommodate spirituality. What is it? How can we understand what spirituality is? How can we understand what eternality is? We can only understand things by having a mark, by having a, what's it called? A reference point. When we want to judge something, we first have to have a reference point. But where's the reference point in eternality? There's no reference point, so we can't accommodate, we can't understand what is eternality. Because there's nothing to compare it with. Similarly, we can't understand what is spirituality, because there's no reference point in the material world. And it's beyond our, as far as we can go, is the intellect. But it's beyond intellect. So it's not possible to actually perceive. But we're trying to put everything in a box and get everything together and sort everything out. It doesn't work like that, not on the spiritual platform. We can know that by grace, mercy only. When the Lord reveals to us, then we can know. When it is revealed to us, then we can know, not otherwise. It's by our own endeavor. Your endeavor, we're endeavoring to know Krishna, we're taking up the rules, regulation, vaidhi, huh? Sadhana, under rule, vaidhi bhakti. It's a rule is there, but it's not by that rule we're going to actually capture Krishna, but it's by our sincere submission to those rules to know Krishna, that attitude or that consciousness, which is actually the secret formula. The rules are just a form that we, because we have, you know, we deal with form and we deal with activity, so we perform some activity, but that's just to express our mentality or our bhakti. But it's the devotion or the sincere endeavor, which actually is a winning thing. The form is just a medium. The rule is the form. But you won't know Krishna by the form. You know Krishna by the mood or the bhava. That's what he's looking for. But because we don't have it, then we express that bhava, we express our devotion through form, by activities. Hearing, chanting, remembering, serving the Lord, the Lord's at his feet, serving the deity, seeing the deity, all those kind of things. But as sincerely as we do that, with the goal of actually pleasing Krishna, this is perfection, to that degree of our sincerity, then we can understand. Krishna will reveal to us by his desire when he wants to. So this is the this is what is being pointed out in the Srimad Bhagavatam throughout all these different histories. Who are the successful people? They're the ones that actually contact Krishna directly or indirectly through his because indirectly it's also Krishna, like his name, fame, qualities, pastimes, form, his service. So those ones who are engaged in that service to Krishna, then because it's absolute, we can't perceive absolute, but we've heard it's absolute and we have faith that it's absolute. So if we focus our consciousness on that absolute things, like service, hearing, chanting, etc., then immediately you're free from the, you're out of the jurisdiction of Maya. Whereas a lot of the other religious processes, you're actually confronting Maya. Either you're trying to control Maya as a jnani or a yogi, you're trying to become detached from Maya, or you're trying to enjoy Maya in a religious way as a karmic. So none of them are actually effective in Kali Yuga. They take too long. So the direct process is bhakti. That's what Krishna's saying. He says, give up all these other dharmas. I'm preaching dharma, but now I'm telling you, give up these dharmas. Just surrender to me. And I will do all those things for you. I carry what you lack, don't worry. So that's Krishna's proposition. So therefore we have this such a wonderful opportunity now, thanks to Krishna's devotees and coming in the line of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And we got very, very easy, because there's no prerequisite, there's no qualification necessary. It's not a question of becoming purified. Then Krishna's going to accept our service. As Krishna, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, is accepting the service unconditionally. The condition is faith, that's all. Favorable mentality, that's all. We can't wait for purification, because we won't get purification in Kali Yuga. You only live 100 years. How are you going to do it? But the so-called purification is a byproduct of devotional service, because devotional service is direct. You're directly serving Krishna. As a result of that, the karma bijas become fried. That is a secret of bhakti. So your karma is, while you're serving Krishna, while you're focused on the spiritual energy, the spiritual world, in the form of seva, etc., nine processes, then you're not focused on Maya, so then there's no karma. And the old karmas, they're being destroyed, they're being fried, so they don't actually fructify like they should. So that is the secret of bhakti. Direct process. It's very simple. And then, but we need to hear all these histories in the nine cantos so that we can come convinced. It's actually a waste of time to over-endeavor for my future. You have to take some precautions, right? You have to. If you're sick, you take medicine. It's not like we just ignore it. We're not that advanced. That's the symptoms of the advanced person. What's that chapter? Symptom of Prahlad Maharaj is going, looking, look, the character of saintly people. And he meets the python man who does nothing. But he's perfectly self-realized. He doesn't depend on anything. He knows, I'm not going to suffer anymore. I'm not going to enjoy any more than what I do. What's the point of acting? What's the point of trying to endeavor for happiness or try to endeavor to remove the problems? I can't do that. It's karma. It's going to come anyway. So then he doesn't endeavor. He doesn't even endeavor to do anything. But that's, he is self-realized. He's already at that stage. We can't do that. But minimize... Prabhupada said we should minimize that eating, sleeping, mating, defending. They're the four necessities of life. You minimize those, and then the rest of the time, then you have more time. And those also, the eating, sleeping, enjoying, and defending, you also dovetail in Krishna's service. It means everything goes on within that our barrier, our safety net of intoxication, sex, meeting, and gambling. So within that scope, we do our eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. And that's it. Then you're secure. You're insulated by the instructions of the spiritual master. And then we chant Hare Krishna, we follow those things, and that's it. That's it. But of course, when you focus again on the material energy, when you're thinking of how to improve your situation, or how to enjoy the material situation, once again you've left the safety, the insulation, and because you're dealing again with Maya. When you're thinking, how can I improve my situation? You're talking about a material adjustment. That's all, isn't it? We want to know how to live more comfortably. So then now you're talking, now you're addressing Maya again. How can I address life so I can be more comfortable, and when I'm more comfortable, then I can be happy. So we're relating, it's our happiness, and we're trying to adjust Maya for our happiness and our safety. Same thing. So, but we're addicted to doing that, because it seems like it's essential that we do that to exist. And practically, it is to a certain degree. Right? As you wake up in the morning, whatever you think, you're your body, isn't it? When you wake up, you're your body. What are you going to do? Take it to the bathroom, clean it, brush his teeth, and put tilak on it, put cloth on it. It's all body stuff in the morning, isn't it? You prepare it. We are conditioned, and there's certain limitations, and there's standards that we follow, how to minimize the needs of the body, what we should do, what we shouldn't do. These are the rules that we follow. That's to minimize the eating, sleeping, mating, defending. So then you have more time for direct devotional service. Otherwise, in the material world, everyone's 100% of the time eating, sleeping, mating, defending, isn't it? What else are they doing? So minimize that. And as we advance more, we should minimize more. Start to minimize on the subtle platform. Like, the mind, keeping the mind away from it also, as well as the gross activities of the body. Also restraining the mind from it and focusing the mind back on the spiritual substance, which is devotional service to Krishna. And so the histories we see there, those people who are successful are the ones that actually do that. The ones that actually surrender means surrender. I'm surrendering the idea that I can control and enjoy Maya. That's what surrender means. And then in that state, then you'll be very satisfied and happy. That's the position. Then you can surrender to Krishna. The purposes of bhakti, we immediately surrender to Krishna. So automatically, you become detached from Maya, automatically, while you're absorbed in service to Krishna. And you get more than happiness, because the happiness of the tattvasthu, or just the freedom from liberation, is static. It's happiness, it's freedom, but it's not ecstatic, because there's no waves there. It's non-dual. But in devotion, the happiness comes in different ways, in different forms, different varieties, and different emotions, because it's personal, you see. So this is what we learn by, repeatedly hearing in the Srimad Bhagavatam. That is the purpose of it, to bring us to this conclusion. We got to do it today or tomorrow. It's in our own interest. Prabhupada said, Krishna consciousness is not a question of a choice. It's a matter of necessity. We're suffering in the material world, huh? Better believe it. So this is the way. But immediately you can get relief from your karmas just by surrendering to Krishna, giving your mind to devotional service. And once we know these secrets, what's going on, then we can be happy. We get old, we get sick, and we die, but we won't have that anxiety that we normally used to have, because we know it's an illusion, a dream, just to try to be successful materially, peaceful and happy materially. Even if you can, how long does it last, you see? So then the devotional life, you'll be free from anxiety. Of course, you're not out of the material body. You've got to go through all the changes, but at least there's no anxiety, so you'll be happy. Your life becomes peaceful and happy, which is what we're looking for materially. That's why we're trying to adjust the material energy for peace, right? Security, and then happiness. So automatically that's achieved by bhakti, because you lose those desires of struggling in the material world, because to get peace and happiness, you've got the time to get through. And within time, there's old age, disease, death, hunger, fear, thirst, lamentation, adhyatmic, adhidevic, adhibaltic, all these things to achieve your goal. But if you give that up, you save so much problem, so much anxiety. That's bhakti. Immediately you've solved your problem. Immediately you endeavor for happiness material, that's when your problem starts. Because you've got to get through all these difficulties, kuntas. But spiritual world, the bhakti is different. So that's what this that's what all these histories are really for, to bring us to the conclusion that these people couldn't do it. They had so much faculty, facility, kings, emperors, demigods, munis. They weren't successful. The ones that surrendered to Krishna ultimately were successful. So how do we think we're going to be successful if they couldn't do it? And it's the same stories again and again and again and again. So we will get a little broad-minded as we keep on hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam and performing devotional service. So because the purification is an automatic byproduct of devotional service. The senses become purified, right? Our devotional life automatically puts us in the mode of goodness, the devotional way of life, the food we eat, the lifestyle we live. And then the mind gets purified, the intelligence gets purified automatically like that, you see. Then the ahankara gets purified. That's how it works. But they're automatic. We don't. The other processes, the other process of jnana, yoga, etc. They're focuses on these things. How to get rid of these things? How to purify the senses? How to purify the intelligence, which is material energy. It's Krishna's material energy. So they're indirect processes. If you're successful in those, then you've achieved your goal. Then you're peaceful. Then you understand I should be serving Krishna. Then you serve Krishna. But the process of bhakti is direct. You can immediately serve Krishna. So there's no need to go through those troublesome processes. And Krishna will accept. As Mahaprabhu, he will accept. Before, it was different. To serve Krishna, you had to come to the Sudha-Sattva platform. But you can't do it in Kali Yuga. But Mahaprabhu says, no, I'll accept. I'm accepting anyway. Whatever condition, I'm not taking into consideration what your condition is, what your qualification or disqualification is. I will accept. So that's perfection. It means devotional service is perfection according to our level. Whatever consciousness we're at, if we're performing devotional service, that is our perfection. And then as we continue that, then you get purification, and then you'll experience those higher things that you're always anxious for. Huh? Bhava. Ruchi. What everyone talks about, that'll come automatically, as sincerely as we, as a byproduct. They're not the actual goals. The goal is to serve Krishna for his pleasure. That's what they do in the spiritual world. So that if our goal is to serve Krishna here, then that's perfection, without any expectation back. That's most perfect. That's pure unalloyed devotional service. But it's very simple, you see. The opportunity is right there, right now. We can do. There's nothing stopping us except our mind. So by continuously hearing, in association with devotees, and all those things will gradually dissolve. All those misgivings will gradually dissolve. Then we realize what we're supposed to be serving Krishna. Isn't it? That's what we created. That's our very existence, is service to Krishna. And anything apart from that is incomplete. So when we get convinced of that and actually apply that, then that's the actual perfection. But it's always perfect the moment from day one, as long as the sincerity is a favorable attitude, that's direct. You're directly connecting the spiritual atmosphere. So that's perfection on that level. Then you've got different levels of our perfection, which I'm anxious for. So this is the magic of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is, nothing but this, a spiritual energy manifested in this book form. It's nothing. It's saying nothing but about pure devotional service and how to achieve devotional service. So therefore, it's explaining what is a material energy, what is a spiritual energy, what is the interaction, what is the jivas. Explain. So it's not. It's not different. It's meant. It's meant only for reviving our love of God. So it's also a spiritual activity. It's directly Krishna. Or indirectly, as you may perceive it. So that is our great fortune. So we are very grateful and thankful for what we got, and not be too anxious to achieve something which we don't even deserve. We're very fallen, but we're given a chance, even in the fallen condition. Don't have to wait for purification. Mahaprabhu has given us a chance to engage in service. He's offering devotional service. We should be really grateful, thankful for that. That, you know, we're so fallen, really. That he's given us a chance, and he's accepting our service. We say, "Oh, but I want this, I want this, I want this," and you know, we don't appreciate what we've actually got. We're undeserving. We got such a wonderful gift. We're not grateful for that. We want more. We want more. I want this. I want more. It's not very nice, actually. So, be peaceful. Be satisfied that we have direct devotional service to Krishna. And then your anxiety will go away. It's perfection of life. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Prabhupada ki jai.